Very excited, as I said, to have 2014 WWE Hall of Famer Jake Roberts. Jake, the Hall of Fame has come and gone. However, that ring and those memories of that weekend, I'm sure are going to last you for a long, long time.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, just to have that moment for something that you've loved for so long and worked so hard at, to have finally have that dream realized is some meat and potatoes, isn't it?
Absolutely, man. Hey, you have I've got so many things to talk to you about, so we're going to I'm not going to rush you, and I'm not going to – and our show may be a little longer than normal. A lot of ground to cover here. I want to get – because it's been an issue. It's been talked about. How's your health? How are you feeling? Because I know you've had struggles recently.
Yeah. You know, I've got a little cancer scare going on. And, I say it's a scare. It's not a scare because I've got all the faith in the world in God and – So my higher power's got a better plan for me than I've ever had. In fact, I try to keep myself out of the middle of his plan because I just wind up messing things up. But, you know, I'm not scared of it because I've come to a comfortable place in my life where I'm happy with myself. You know, for so many years I struggled with addiction and a lot of issues, and I finally got those, under control, and I doctor them daily. So I don't have to worry about that. And, if you can beat addiction, you can beat anything.
Yes,
and I'm telling you, I fought addiction for 45 years and could not beat it. And I finally got the right recipe and surrounded myself with the right people and the right friends and the right mindset of attacking it and went after it, and it came out the other side, and I'm one of the very few that have been so fortunate to come out the other side of addiction.
Yeah.
You usually come out in the box.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful to God and my friends that have stood by me and waited for me to get ready to do it. Because addiction's still that one thing that you got to do, man. You got to do it yourself. Ain't nobody can wish it upon you, and nobody can hold your hand while you do it. You still got to do it. But it certainly helps to have the right support group.
Yeah, I've always thought, you know, when we had guys in the locker room that had addiction issues, and you could set them up in rehab. You could try to make their life easier, make sure that their weekly checks still went to their house and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Do the right thing, but I would always tell them, at the end of the day, this is about how you respond to your therapy.
Right. The therapy that you're given sometimes in rehabs, I just, I guess I'm second-guessing it, but then again, I've been there several times, and it didn't work.
Right. How many did you go to?
I went to three.
Yeah.
I went to three, and it did not work. But I moved in with Dallas.
Yeah.
And the thing about Dallas was, number one, it wasn't a four-month program. I was there for, better part of 14 months.
Wow.
And he got you into a habit. The first thing he done is he changed every dang thing that you had. He changed where you lived. He changed how you dealt with the public. He got me on dang iPads, iPhones, all that crazy stuff. And all of a sudden, I got stuff rattling my brain, brother. My brain wasn't working too good before,
Yeah, now you're
taking on this other stuff.
Now you're a tweeting machine.
Yeah, now I'm tweeting, so I get myself in trouble doing that. So there we go. I just found another tool to get myself in trouble with, because sometimes I speak my mind whenever I would keep my mouth shut. And I still take a lot of things personal when somebody rattles off one tweet or something and says something that I feel is wrong, or they're off the mark a little bit on the way they're saying something. I've been known to let people have it.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
So I've been reprimanded a few times by Dallas, and now I have somebody to reach my tweets before they go out. So.
That's all. Hey, that's a smart deal. Somebody always told me that if you're PO'd and you're going to send somebody an email, after you write it, sit back and read it again.
Yeah.
and think about before you send it. So it's obvious that Dallas, and who I talked to last week, he made such an amazing difference in your life. I'd suffice to say he actually saved your life, I would think.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt he saved my life and probably Scott's too.
Yeah.
Well, definitely mine. I'll speak for myself. That'd be Scott's decision. But, yeah, he definitely saved my life. I was at the end of my rope, and I was wishing that my rope was shorter. That's how far down I was. I'm ashamed to say it now, but I'd get angry at God when I found out somebody else had died. You know, I was like, why not me, damn it? You know, what's wrong with me, God? Come on, give me a break. At least take me home, you know, take me away from this. And because, you know, I was so frustrated at being an addict and so angry at myself. You know, people understand that when you're an addict, you're not enjoying dope, man. That's long gone. You're not having fun. You know, people have this conception, well, he's happy, he's high. No, that's not the way it works when you become an addict. It's grueling work to stay high. It's a lot of anger, a lot of self-hate. You punish yourself. You enjoy nothing in life. The simplest pleasures are long gone. The only thing that you live for is that drug. And when you're living in that life, man, there ain't nothing happy about it.
No, that's...
There's no sunshine.
That's Satan's life.
People feel that that's, you know, oh, there he's happy, he's high. No, let me tell you something, JR. I've never seen anybody in jail or rehab that said, you know, my dream was to grow up and become an addict or an alcoholic. Nobody dreams that stuff, okay? It's something that happens to us along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's for my best advice is don't ever pick up that first time. That way you'll never become that addict or an alcoholic.
Good lesson. Don't start the don't turn down the wrong road. Because the road is a dark and it's going to end in a car crash.
Yeah.
And the other thing is if you do inadvertently make that turn and you choose to get back on the right road, you can still do that. It is possible.
It can be done.
Yeah, it can be done.
It can be done, but it takes a lot of hard work, and it takes patience beyond Job. You know,
yeah.
It really does. Because Dallas, he had an unbelievable love for me to throw that out there. Because I put him through some hell. You know, I mean, we had some nose to nose situations, and. He kind of brainstormed before he did all this. He thought it out. He thought, you know, this would really be great. Because he really did want to help me, and he did. But he was also smart enough to say, you know what, maybe we should record all this on film.
Right.
And at some point turn it into a movie. And that's what they're doing right now. They're piecing it together to make this thing. I think it's going to The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, and, I look back now and I can't believe where I came from and I can't believe I made it, but I did. And going into the Hall of Fame was confirmation that I did.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, really, really was.
You're staying.
I shouldn't have been in there from just the way that I behaved and some of the things that I said, they were so far off base and so out of line. And I hope that the McMahons and the WWE understand that was just an addict venting and being cruel, because it's a lot easier for me to yell at you than it is for me to listen to myself and look at myself.
Wow. Well, hey, better days. Those days are behind you. Great things are in front of you. How are you booking yourself? How are you, from a professional standpoint? Now you're basically your own booker. Now you can.
Well, I am. I've got a buddy I live with. He's my lawyer. Mike Tyson said I was the smartest son of a gun around. He goes, to move in with your lawyer is showing wisdom beyond belief. You know, because he kind of lets me know that I shouldn't say this or shouldn't do that.
That's smart.
Before I do it,
and save a dollar or two.
Yeah, and he's a good friend. He's a good friend. We work out together. He played baseball at the University of Georgia. He's sports-minded. We're getting ready to really get serious about doing a little podcast of our own.
Cool.
We did a little warm-up study, and it felt pretty good. But he does my booking. It's a lot easier for him to play the heel than it is for me because I got a soft heart, and I've been known just to really set myself up for stupid stuff. And he sifts it out, smells it out, and figures it out. And, you know, not only are we doing Jake Roberts doing a wrestling show, my hope is, for this new year and the years to come will be for me to go to a town and speak on a Friday, maybe to a couple of schools, and do a little service work because that's real important in what I want to do in staying sober. It helps if I help other people. Mm-hmm. And to speak at a couple of schools would be awesome. And from there, maybe do a wrestling show on Friday night or Saturday night, and possibly even do a one-man standing type thing, yeah. You know, where I tell about road stories and stuff, you know. I know that idea for me, JR.
Yeah, man. Have at it, man.
I'm going to go out there and tell a bunch of my stories and stuff, have a few giggles, have a few laughs, yeah. And, you know, and then sell my book, too. My book will be out in about 6 weeks now, 8 weeks, and it's 600 pages, and we haven't even got to the WWE yet, so... the first book that's coming out is going to be the first years of my career and all those years up until the time I went to the WWE. And the second book will be the WWE years. The third book will be the years after. And there is life after the WWE, but you sure need to take care of the years that you are there because, you know, you never know what you got until it's gone.
Yeah, well, that's the way in everything.
You and I both know
what
it feels like when you're not. Part of the pie.
That's all right. You know, yeah, you want to be on the team. And once you're on, once you're on the team, you're there's parts of you that never leave the team. To be honest with you.
Yeah. You leave your heart and soul back there. And, I miss wrestling just a lot. You know, for 2 years I didn't wrestle at all because I got in such horrible shape. You know, I went up to 308 pounds, but doing DDP yoga, I got myself down to 240, and I'm in shape now. I'm feeling really pretty spry for 58.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, let's don't get carried away now and start doing any hurricanranas and head scissors.
I'm going to save that for you, JR.
Oh, then it's safe for good. Let me tell you.
Yeah, absolutely.
My God. You want to, you talk about somebody running to sobriety, seeing me in tights would put anybody that I know,
God.
That would scare them straight. I can promise you.
Yeah,
hey, you know, you said, going back to where you started, I was looking through a thing the other day that somebody sent me, and it was a real old Mid-South program.
I have one show with me and you standing there looking at each other, looking silly.
Yeah, I think Frenchie Bernard or somebody took the picture. That Frenchie guy was Little Al.
Yeah, I remember from Baton Rouge.
Yeah, Little Al. Little Al.
Yeah, Little Al, yeah.
So it was you in a referee shirt.
Yeah.
And I bet you were like 20, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, I was 19, yeah.
19.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny how many of us that have hung around the business for as long as we have, that we passed through the ranks of refereeing at some point.
Well, refereeing is so key, and it's such a keen place to learn. You know, if it were my doings, and I was the guy running the horse to the pasture, I'd make everybody to referee a few matches because you learn something out there.
Yep, you sure do.
You know, you got to learn where to be. You also learn to become familiar in the ring without being that guy in the ring. You know, yeah, you are a referee, but you're not having to take the bumps, and you're learning how to position yourself in the ring. There is so much to learn from refereeing. You learn timing. You learn to become animated.
Yeah.
You know, with your face and stuff, having to react to things. And because let's face it, though, without a good referee, you're not going to have a good match.
No, you can really screw. Here's
referees
the thing.
Referees are very important.
Yeah, they can really screw it up. They can.
They can make a good match great, and they can make a bad match good.
So it's a real important role.
Good referee camp.
And the I think people overlook that a lot. I get asked questions all the time. You think a referee will go in the WWE Hall of Fame? Hey, I think that'll happen Sunday without question.
I hope so. You know, I hope so. There were some guys who were very good, you know, doing it. Some guys who are pretty damn classy at doing it too.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and of course, I remember some of the worst referees. I remember Bill Watts hiring what was his name? Sputnik Monroe to referee for a little while, and then that didn't work too well with his counting language.
I think he probably had to do a favor for Leroy on Sputnik, because Leroy had a closeness. Leroy McGurk, we're talking about the blind promoter that broke me in '74, him and Watts. For those that don't know, most of them listening here know that. But nonetheless, Leroy had a penchant for Tretch Phillips and Sputnik Monroe.
Yeah.
And I remember Leroy.
He honored him.
Yeah, well, he got him jobs. He kept him around. I get it. I mean, was it the best hire? Well, probably wasn't the best hire, but it was what it was. Who was your mentor at 19?
You know, I did it the absolute wrong way. You know, I dove in there head first. You know, I didn't get taught anything. In fact, you know, JR, I don't know if you realize this or not, but I wasn't smart till the first night that I refereed. I did not know it was a work. Grizzly had called me, and I was down visiting him, and he said, "Do you have a white shirt?" I said, "Yeah, I got a white shirt." He said, "Do you have a pair of black pants?" "No." "Well, stop and get you a pair." I'm like, "Well, what for?" He goes, "We're refereeing tonight in Alexandria." And hung up the phone. And it scared me half to death. Because, you know, Bob Sweetcam was around stomping the ground through there then, and he was a scary son of a gun.
Yeah, he was.
You know, he was a mean, scary son of a gun if you did not know, you know, the business.
Yeah.
And I was terrified of him because I'd heckled him, and I thought, "Oh, my God, I'm going to be near him. That's okay. I'll just disqualify him." Because, you know, again, I thought it was a shoot. And Luke Brown picked me up and drove me to Alexandria.
Oh, Luke.
You know, yeah, and the whole way there, I kept saying, "Luke, what do I do if the guy didn't break it again?" "Well, it'd be a disqualification there, neighbor."
That's right.
You know, and and I'm like, "Well, okay, so if I don't like the guy, I get disqualified, he'll be like, not unless it's a finish." I'm like, "Well, what do you mean finish?" "Well, the ending." "Oh, okay, the ending, okay. So finally, he just kept looking at me. Finally, he says, "Are you smart?" And I said, "Damn straight, I'm smart. I finished high school."
Yeah.
No, he goes, "No, are you Schmizart?" And I'm like, "Well, what?"
Yeah, he got it.
Kayfabe. I'm like, "What?"
He got his answer.
He's like, "Oh, my God."
Yeah.
He looked at me and he goes, "Faber, it's fake." And my God, I started to cry. My heart got broke.
That was a traumatic day for you. First day on the job.
Oh, it was.
Broke. Hey, you could write a country song about your first day at work. It was everything you didn't want it to be and more.
It broke my heart. Yeah. I was so angry, JR. My father, for scaring us kids all those years.
Oh, he come home bloody and all.
Oh, yeah. You know, he hardly raced, jumped off of his neck, supposedly broke his neck, all these horrible things. And I used to, oh, my God, I really hate him for the Jody Hamilton stuff, because I did not know that was Jody and Tom Ernesto riding in the back seat of my father's cars. You know, I just thought they were a couple of guys. He told me they were a couple of guys that worked for the office.
You know,
they were the assassins.
The assassins and the Kentuckians.
Right.
I've written about this before. It was the most influential match or program that turned me into a wrestling fan in my whole life. Honest to God.
It was simple.
We'll get back into the Assassins and the Kentuckians and bring it to more modern times, because want to talk to you about Randy Savage and some of those great WWF programs back in the day. We were talking about the Kentuckians and the Assassins, the tag team. They had a formula. And I was 10 years old in 1962 when they were working in the McGurk's territory in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And Jody gave Grizz a hard way on Channel 4 television. And the ring announcer, Danny Williams, was not smart to the business either. and he was doing the show, okay? So he thought it was something up by somebody's sleeve. He told me the story before he passed away. He got, and Grizz comes out, post-match interview going off the air, and Danny saw the gash, and he got his hand, and he showed everybody how big the gash was above Grizz's eye that the assassins, I think it was Jody.
Jody,
hard-weighted him. And it almost took the announcer off his feet because he saw that it was real. And then and then McGurk almost got lost their TV because the station manager got all this mail, but it was his camera crew that shot it. So, you know, back in the day, you didn't have a TV station was doing your production for you, so it was their deal. So the issue is that the believability factor back then and the protection of the business back then was amazing.
Yeah, it was. And but I tell you, some of the things that my father put us kids through, man, there's just no need for it. And, you know, years later, I was in the locker room, you know, and Jody was there. And I'll be danged if I didn't go back to being that Mark again. And now I ask him, I said, Jody, what was that thing y'all put up in y'all's mask? And he looked at me and laughed. He said, you're still a Mark. And, you know, because the deal is, you know, it's not, there's nothing he put up there in that mask unless the referee's going to catch him with it.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, of course, there's all the theories of it's silver dollars that are taped together and, I mean, all sorts of things.
Yeah,
and,
how about hotel soap?
Yeah. That could happen, too. That could happen, too.
Could happen.
Brutal old hotel. You know, some of that hotel soap will kill you, though.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
And don't smoke none of it.
Or get it in your eyes. You know, get it in your eyes. Hey, what in today's marketplace, I ask people on Twitter a bunch of, give me some Jake the Snake questions that you really are interested in, and your mind and the way you think about things has always impressed people, as it should.
Right.
In today's marketplace, and I got a lot of questions here, so in today's marketplace, simple question, what does it take to be a successful baby face? In today's world.
Well, you know, in today's world, it's no different than it was yesterday. It's just nobody's approaching it that way. I still think the number one thing for a baby face is to learn how to sell, you know. And I think that it hurts the business sometimes when these guys go out there in their inability to learn how to sell.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between selling and dying.
Yep.
You know, but a lot of guys today, they're kicking somebody's butt or they're doing nothing.
Yeah, and are they so with their head down? So they're looking at the canvas, and you can't even see their facial expression.
Right, exactly. So the art of selling is still the number one thing for a baby face.
And what about best thing, what must be in place for a heel to get over?
Well, again, it's stuff that's forgotten. You wouldn't hurt if you cheated every now and then. You know, maybe pulling the hair, grabbing some dice, or cowering off. That's the big thing.
Most
heels want to be these badass monsters.
Yep.
They want to be these bad monsters that never go down.
Yeah.
That's not it, man. Learn how to cower off because everybody hates chicken. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody hates chicken. And, you know, bottom line is, I remember watching one of the great ones, and that was George Krynicki Cannon, 400 pounds,
mm-hmm.
You know, greasy hair and stuff, and he'd be just as meat and gnarly as whatever, but then the second that tide turned, he'd start backing up and tapping his chest like he's having a heart attack, crying for mama, and everybody in that building was like, don't you get up and take what's coming to you.
Yeah, you know.
And that's still number one.
I agree, and I think some of the things, we talked earlier about the referees in the first segment, the referees seem to have very little control.
Well,
the other thing is, what the hell's illegal? I don't know what's illegal anymore.
Right. I mean, they lost the whole shoot match. Whenever I still think going over the top rope should be illegal, that way you could use it.
Yep.
The bottom line, for you to be a heel, what you need to do with the referee is honor the authority. When you back off from the authority, like you almost got caught doing something that was bad, and if you had, there'd been all these horrible things happen to you. But when you also maneuver around him, you know, or you hide from him. You know, then you're cheating, or you use the referee to block the baby face. Then you're cheating, you're a chicken. You know, all these things come into play then. But these guys today, they brush referees around, toss them around, it means nothing. And the bottom line, I used to tell people, it's like, if you were someplace and a guy was beating little kids up, and there's a policeman 5 feet away, if that policeman does nothing, who are you mad at?
Mm-hmm. Policeman.
But if he does his job, he tries to stop the guy, then you hate the guy, right?
Yep.
Right.
Simple psychology. It's just simple psychology, actually.
Very,
you know,
simple.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just logic. It's using logic. Hey, I think one thing, you know, I mentioned this on the show the other day, and I got a lot of feedback on this. I said I miss time limits because they eliminated a finish when he stopped having time limits because you can't have a draw. And then somebody, you know, on Twitter say, well, who's probably never seen a draw in her life, some of these young kids.
Right.
Hey,
right.
some of the great matches that I refereed and I broadcast were draws.
Absolutely. Or the excitement of having that finish pop with 2 seconds left.
Yeah.
Or TV title match where it's 2 seconds too late.
Yeah. This thing is so loosely structured, the business, right now that it when I see a disqualification or a count out in a match, they're so lackluster more often than not. And not just, I'm not talking any one promotion. I'm talking the business in general.
Right.
Let's just do a DQ. And there's very little thought put into doing the DQ. So when it happens, it's like, it's the ultimate letdown. It's like, oh.
Yeah, well, it's the ultimate letdown because they've seen that same thing that got them DQ'd, done 100 times with no repercussions.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, you know, there are no rules.
Hey, what
a deal. It's a shame.
Do you remember learning to work that, I remember refereeing a match with Harley Race, and he said, Harley said, if you see me do it, whatever it is,
call it.
And
darn right.
He said, if you catch me, I'm busted, and I pay the price. If you don't see it, don't assume what's there. Don't call it. And he
that's the best. I mean, if you leave those shoulders down, you count some bitch out.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Pretty easy. Pretty simple. Yeah. It's not you're covered in the back, as they say.
Yeah.
Because the guy didn't get his shoulders up.
Well, why bury yourself? You know, I mean, bottom line, if you pull that hand up, you done told the people it's a work.
Do you think that the most successful performers in our career, because our careers are somewhat the same generations, and now that the best performers are natural extensions of their own personality?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's either that or it's an alter ego. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, because I was Jake the Snake, but I'm definitely not a bad son of a gun or mean tough guy. I'm a pussycat most of the time. You know, I got this horrible voice that says I'm a mean ugly guy, but and it also says I like snakes, which I don't.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Guess what, folks? You know, welcome to the assassins here.
the snake. Hey, when you first got that gimmick, we're actually carrying the snake.
Right.
Can you imagine the look on some young guys' faces today if they were told in today's where they were raised and the era that we are in society in general, you told a guy, hey, your job is to play this villainous wrestler, and you will also, by the way, carry a live snake with you everywhere you go.
They would have laughed, and I don't, you know, it might have been a better world without it, but, you know, it did me well, and, you know, and really, the whole snake thing was an extension of my character, my real life, you know, because I was constantly hiding behind something. You know, I didn't want people to know about my upbringing and the things that had happened at home and different places and what I really was. And so it did well for me. I remember Buck Roby is the one that really got me going in this business. And he told me that, you know, I've been several places and I just couldn't come out of the shell. And he's like, you know, your problem is you know these guys in the locker room and therefore you won't act out anything. You won't take on a different character.
Mm-hmm.
And he was absolutely right. So I don't think he had to send me to Vancouver, British Columbia, but that's what he did.
Yeah.
You know, he sent me out there.
Al Tomko.
Nobody, yeah, absolutely. He says, nobody knows you, so you can go out there and be anything. He said, what I would suggest you do is make it a long road trip, go by yourself, because you ain't going to be able to afford nothing else. But on the way there, go slow and think about what you want to be, not what you are.
That's interesting.
And that's what I did. And Tomko gave me a break because they were so desperate for anything. I went from there to Calgary and set the dungeon for too long. And then I went from there, of course, back to Mid-South.
I saw some of your work in Calgary.
Coming home.
I saw some of your work in Calgary. And that's, as legend has it, that's where you basically discovered the Junkyard Dog, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And Sylvester Ritta up there.
Big Daddy.
Played the part of a pimp, yeah. Big Daddy. And with John Foley as his manager. Dynamite Kid was up there then. And,
wow.
I remember going to Mid-South and telling Watts he should grab Ritter.
Yeah.
And grab Dynamite Kid. And he said, Dynamite Kid will never make a money, make nickel in this business. He's too little.
Yeah. Well, that is.
Well, he was over two there.
Yeah. So, but I remember Sylvester coming back and Bill telling the story that you had given him a good recommendation and thought he had a lot of potential. And and the people got to understand, Dog was a great guy. I mean, I remember when Pee Wee Anderson used to drive Dog around, the late Pee Wee Anderson, he carried bags of quarters, and J.Y. would. You know, there was no drug testing, so he might have a little cannabis at night just to relax, and then he'd get hungry. And then there wasn't wasn't a 24-hour pizza place or you put the quarters in the candy machine.
Yeah,
Pee-wee, go get me a Milky Way. Pee-wee, go get me a Snickers. And Pee-wee always had that big bag of change. I always thought they robbed something because he had the. I said, geez, why don't you get that changed into dollars? Well, no, we need it for the candy machine.
No, we don't need them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, somebody asked me who gave you the idea for the DDT. And so I get inquisitive, and I start looking it up. And then I read somewhere where it was you did it accidentally the first time.
It was in New Orleans, with Lynn Denton, the grappler.
Yeah, good hand. He's an underrated guy.
Oh, yeah, he was. He's not one of those guys. He should have got the big break. And I'm glad to tell you that Lynn is doing well. He's out in Portland with Roddy Piper and those guys. And, in fact, I'm going to go out there and work. They just got a local television back under. Gee, things do happen in cycles, don't they?
Maybe you'll get the belt.
I hope so. I never got it from Lynn.
So the DDT was accidental. You kind of fell into it without, no pun intended, right?
Right, exactly. I'd been doing a little thing where I front face lock Lynn and would really work him over, and I'd fight him out in the middle of the ring, and he'd fight to his feet, and he'd try to reverse out of it, wouldn't be able to, and he'd drive me back into the corner and hurt my lower back. And about the third time he'd do that, I'd release him, and he'd let go of me, and then as he staggered back, I'd catch him with a short knee lift, because actually at the time my finish was a knee lift.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd take that bump in the ropes, 1-2, put that foot in the ropes. Oh, my God, so close. Turn back around, grab that front face lock again. You know, working a hole.
Yep, yep.
Something they don't do anymore. Something that's missed and sorely needed. Sorely needed. If we did that, we wouldn't have to kill 30 finishes a match.
Oh.
But anyway.
Or use a DDT for a high spot.
Yeah, well, I'm glad.
I detest that.
Because if they do that, that just shows the people out there that Jake Roberts still got the best there is.
I guess so. Hey, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, that's the only way I can look at it, because I looked at it in a way I'd want to kill somebody.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But,
it's crazy. So yeah,
he drive me in the corner, and I did with that knee lift. Well, one night he went to drive me in that corner, and he stepped on my foot, and we busted our butts. Well, I busted my butt, and he busted his head. Of course, me being a baby face and young back at that time, I spun to my feet, to quickly tell the people I didn't fall, he fell,
Yeah.
And, But Lynn was smart enough to stay down because he actually heard the people's reaction.
Yeah, smart.
You know, and he was like, oh.
All right. Yeah, you know, there you go.
Yeah, I watched a good one the other day, JR. You know, watching the WWE 24 stuff and seeing the time where I DDT Dark Journey. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
What a pop that was.
Yeah,
what
hey, that was a lot of heat, too, man. Because that was before the Attitude Era and intergender matches and all that stuff, and for and her being a woman of color, and I mean everything you could think of that was politically incorrect happened. It happened right there, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it's gonna be so good to see her at WrestleMania too. You know, and seeing her at WrestleMania was just so awesome.
I saw her at the Cauliflower Alley Club a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, you know. She is something else.
Yeah,
man. Linda's a sweet lady.
She got into the business. You know, we're not talking about her right now, but it's amazing how she survived with such a novice background. I get her on the show one of these days. Hey, a couple of volatile individuals. I want to ask you about the three people I want to ask you about. Number one, in a timely way. This Bray Wyatt kid, everybody's comparing his promos to some of your work. And that's the ultimate compliment in my view. But I think the kid he felt that character so strongly when I was still with the company down at NXT. When he first got it, I know Dusty was real involved in him getting it and gaining confidence and developing it and all that stuff. They all had the same feel. So he felt it, and then he became it. So what he's doing right now is not shocking me, but does he remind you of you when you were at that stage of the game, or where is he in that progression?
I'm not sure. I'd like to spend more time around him, JR. I'd like to tweak him a little bit, and I would like to find out where his head's really at. You know, hopefully he doesn't have the many problems he seems to have on television. He's got all them. So that was my problem. I had all those problems.
Wow.
Okay, I had the twisted darkness inside of me. Hopefully he's not like that.
I don't think so.
If he's not like that, then he's doing a tremendous job because he's got me believing he's real.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy his work, I'll tell
me
you
too.
That much.
Hey, did you you remember being a fan all your life like I have, and you just took it to the ring and took it farther. The Black Jack Mulligan was one of their all-time great promo guys.
Yeah.
And that's his kid's grandpa. So there may be something in that gene pool that says, hey, I got the ability to do this, and I just got to find my role, my character.
Well, you know, you're around it long enough, it's got to rub off on you, I think.
Yeah, the colorfulness and me.
Yeah.
I think what he figured out and what I got from him is that he found something that was unique that he could pull off without a guy sitting home rolling his eyes at bad acting.
Right.
People think this kid is a little twisted.
Yeah. Well, I hope not. He's as twisted as I think he is. We're all in trouble.
Now, another guy that people thought was a little bit twisted, I just didn't ever understand him. I work with him, but you work with him a lot, was the Macho Man.
You
know,
my
broadcasting with him, we didn't have bad broadcasts, but he never trusted me.
He never trusted anybody.
You worked with him a lot.
Yeah.
Did he ever trust you?
It wasn't easy either. So I remember whenever I did the thing with Elizabeth, where I slapped her. Oh, my God. The next time I seen Randy, he was wound so friggin' tight. God, what the heck's going on with him? And hell, we get to ring, JR, and he's beating the snot out of me. And I'm having just protect myself, blocking.
Wow.
And I finally get to the back. I'm like, man, what is wrong with you? You don't understand. I had to go back to Kentucky where she's from, and the family won't even let me in the house. They said I didn't protect her little girl, that, you know, blah, 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 that I was a no good piece of crap, blah, 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 blah. Wow. I'm going to kill you now. Well, okay, but you don't really have to kill me, do you?
Yeah.
You know, I'm begging you because you are killing me. And we had to cut that whole angle short because he wasn't allowed to come to the yard. He wasn't allowed to go back home. They wanted her to leave him because he had allowed somebody to put their hands on her, you know. And you know, again, it goes back to where you smarted them up, saved my life.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no lie. Hey, that was a big, but that was a big angle, man. That was a big, that could have been a big money deal. And speaking of that, it could have been big money. You left, there was some money left on the table on that deal. Money left on the table, pal. Hey,
tons of it.
What do you think? Did you leave WWE? Your big run there, obviously, was 86 and 92. That was your biggest run. Where you were arguably the number, there was Hogan and then there was you. Or there was, it was considered, you know, you were right there in that, that upper three babyface.
Right.
Did you ever look back, like we all do sometimes, and say, man, I should have had that WrestleMania main event? Was that a big deal for you that you didn't work?
I should have, but, you know, it just wasn't in the card, JR. And bottom line is, you know, they had made that machine up there to take care of Hogan. You know, and he was the golden goose. And, you know, bad timing on my part. I came along, and I could have competed with Hogan at any level. And I think that if given the opportunity that Hogan had, I would have been bigger than Hogan. But that was not given to me. And their choice was Hogan, and they had spent all the money on marketing on Hogan. And it was bad timing on Jake Roberts. Because, you know, whenever I came in there and I got over as a heel, but it was just so crazy how people were turning me babyface. Because what happens with a heel is this, and my mistake with being the heel I was, is that I didn't do enough chicken stuff.
Yeah.
I could have stayed a heel.
Yeah.
But I never cowered off. I took a beat. I'd take a beat. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't cower off.
Right.
And that was my mistake.
Sound like Stone Cold.
Because, right. And it, what happens is it will turn you babyface because people respect you. And if they respect you, the last thing they want to do is be afraid of you.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So that was my mistake. No, I think I could have been whatever I wanted to be, JR. But, you know, I made some bad choices in life. But, you know, I've got my wheels back under me, and my hope today is that I live the rest of my life clean and sober, and whatever else comes, I'll take it.
Well, you know, and that's the way to look at it, good positive outlook. You talked about not having the WrestleMania main event.
Right.
You've lived through that. I mean, you've obviously gone through hell and come out on the other side a better man. We're running out of time here. I just want to ask you, did you think, did your drug use when you were Jake the Snake – help your being able to pull off that persona of the calculating, cold, manipulative, dark, mysterious character?
I don't think the drug use did. I think the mood that it put me in did.
Okay.
Drug use is not going to make your career better.
There you go.
Bottom line.
Good statement.
But drug use will make you learn to lie. An alcoholic and a drug addict can lie better than anybody else on the planet.
That's what heels do, too, right?
They have to. They have to. Well, I think that's what made me so good at creating other characters, too, is I lived outside of the box because my box had to be open-ended because I had to find a way to hide. I had to find a place to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And I always hid from the truth. I hid from the truth. You know, and to make a lie work, you have to believe that lie. You know, so to make a character work, you got to believe in that character, don't you?
Damn right. Sure do.
There you go.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, hey, last question. This is kind of the trendy thing going around. I get asked it every day, and I try, and you don't have to answer it, by the way. You have to answer any of these questions. This Mount Rushmore thing. Everybody says, what four faces would you put on a pro wrestling Mount Rushmore? And I get asked this question a lot, and I think it's just kind of making the rounds. I think it made it in the NBA and so forth and so on. If you had a Mount Rushmore, four faces from wrestling, who would they be?
Boy, that would be a tough one. Duke and Yuka would have to be one of them.
Wow.
You know, Eddie Graham, you know. I don't know if it would be any of the talent that I'd Steve Austin, maybe.
Yeah.
but it would be some of the old timers, you know.
Some interesting thing to think about.
Danny Hodge, you know, there's so many guys. You know, and there wasn't film on a lot of these guys, and it's a damn shame because they were a whole different brood of animal.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, they were good. Hey, they helped us get to where we are.
And absolutely. You know, absolutely. And I just hope this business does do the full circle, and we have the opportunity to see new guys come along that are of that breed, that man. Because those guys were real men.
Yeah, they were, no doubt about it. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us today. It's been a great visit, and I enjoy catching up. I'm really, really thankful where you are, and
I appreciate it.
You know, I am. I you know, golly.
Yeah, I've always loved you. I never told you about
it. Oh, thank you, brother. Same here.
How the hell we both survived, Bill Watson? We did it.
We did. Hey, we did. And and we learned things, whether they were good.
Yeah, we did.
Good
lessons. We did. He was a great teacher. I just didn't like the way he went about it.
You know, I told the same thing to young guys about dealing with Vince McMahon. Never confront the Irishman. Converse with the Irishman. Converse, don't confront. And Bill loved – just embraced the engagement of confrontation.
Yeah. He liked that. I'm not that way, and I don't have time for that anymore, man.
Oh, no.
You know? So if you want to argue or something, go find a fence post somewhere, because it's not me.
Yeah, we got better. I don't know how much time either one of us got left, but whatever it is, I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it and take every day for what it's worth.
Well, I'll tell you this. I've enjoyed this show a lot, and I hope the fans keep tuning in, and I hope to see you again soon, bud.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you.